Humility is one of the central virtues on display as we get in the readings, so I'd like to say a few words of praise in this great virtue tonight. First, to acknowledge that it's a bit of an elusive virtue. If somebody says they have it, we can be sure there is some more. And if they say that they don't have it, at least we know they're moving in the right direction towards humility itself. I offer that one of the best things about humility is that it's kind of a gateway to the virtues. Cultivated in life, it becomes that much easier for any other virtue to take root and begin to grow. It's something like good soil for the virtuous life. And if we think of humility through the lens of soil, we're getting close to the point, because humility comes from the Latin root, humus, which is a great food. It's another conversation, but humus means ground or earth. And it's this same root that gives us the meaning for humanity. So it's kind of fascinating to think of humility and humanity side by side and consider that one is supposed to illuminate the other, as if to say that by someone embracing humility, making it part of their life, they necessarily become more human, more humane, two or so closely connected. One of the best definitions for humility I've come across, I think I've seen multiple people quoted as saying this, but the first place was Mother Teresa. It's only three words. Three-word definition, easy to remember. She said, humility is truth. It's a great definition. If we're humble, we're really being honest about who we are. We're being honest about life. We're being honest about our place in life. There are many times in life when we're uncertain what to do next. Life is full of mysterious adventures. We're not sure always of the next step. It's never a bad idea to be humble. Humility is truth. How likely are we, if we choose that path of humility as truth, to look back later and say, that was a mistake, I went through the wrong door? It doesn't happen very often. Humility is truth. It expresses something honest about who we are. Humility has the capacity to tell us who we are as human beings. There's a way that it also can teach us how we interact with God, what our relationship with God is like. A great place to look at this is in Genesis chapter 2, creation of Adam. In the Hebrew scriptures, oftentimes, names are a play on words, kind of a poetic meaning. And this is the case with Adam. Adam is a play in Hebrew on the word Adama, which means ground or earth, much like humus in Latin. And it points to the fact that God fashions Adam from the clay of the earth. So Adam's humility is not something to be embarrassed by. It's a natural part of who he is. So when, as a creature, Adam turns to the Creator of God, he does so in humility, not just in a good way, but in the best of ways, the most natural way for Adam to turn to the Creator is in humility. And this is the case for us who are fashioned by God. When we turn to the Creator, we do so in humility. In a way, this isn't even a choice, because how could we brag before God about anything we've accomplished? What could we boast of that we pulled off by ourselves? Before God, we're all pretty empty-handed. We're beggars before God. We're necessarily humble, but sometimes we fight it. It's good to turn to God with that sense of deep humility. Great definition by Thomas Merton of humility was that humility means trying not to offend God. As if to say, I acknowledge that I'm a creature that you made me. So I'm going to live my life in a way that tries not to offend you, God. Going to happen occasionally through my own weakness, but mindful of your role in my life, I'm going to try not to offend you by the way I live. Sometimes life is really that simple. Humility means trying not to offend God. We think about humility in this way. It's kind of a preparation for thinking of the gospel. The gospel tonight is from Luke chapter 14. It tells us at the beginning that the crowds are observing Jesus. They're studying him for how he's going to respond in this situation. And it doesn't say that he's observing the crowd or studying the crowd. We can tell, as the gospel is laid out, he's deeply aware of what's taking place around him as people vie for seats of honor at this banquet. As I was thinking of Christ looking at this crowd yesterday, I remembered a conversation that I had a number of years ago in Washington, D.C. I was talking with a young guy about some of the challenges being an upright person in the world. And he said to me at one point, I don't want to keep score. And I wasn't sure exactly what he meant by that, so I asked him to explain it. He was had a professional job, young family, two kids, I think, young wife, been married for a couple of years, said there's a type of keeping score that's natural. I took the kids to school yesterday, they took them today, I went to the grocery. This week, you go next week. In a way in life, we have to keep score to get anything done. But there's a way of keeping score that we easily fall into that leads us astray. It's easy for us to tabulate the faults of others, to keep track of slights in life, ways that we've been overlooked, ways that people offended us. The difficulty of this is we do it a lot of times without noticing. It's like a tape is playing in our mind. And sometimes we didn't realize that we began to play. I was offended in this way. I'm keeping score of what I deserve, how I was slighted, offended by other people. There's a type of keeping score that can be tinged with a bit of malice in our hearts. It can be a little bit uncharitable, which we're judging others, and we're vying for places of honor, seats of honor, where we think we deserve to end up. It's so easy for this to happen to all of us in life, whatever our state in life is. Christ is observing the crowds. It's good for us to observe ourselves. When is this state playing? Tape that says, I deserve to be here. Someone else did this. Offend me. The type of keeping score that can lead us away from God. This is when the virtue of humility is perhaps most important. Because how happy does this malicious keeping score make us? Do we ever feel gratified or satisfied by keeping score in such a way? It's worth acknowledging that the parable Christ tells in response to the situation is in the context of a wedding banquet. Revelation speaks of eternity, paradise, heaven, as a wedding banquet. And it's the case that even in this life, we have a glimpse of that banquet. We have a taste in this life. We're members of Christ's body. He's the marriage of heaven and earth, humanity and divinity in one place. In him, we have a taste of the heavenly banquet. Part of the tragedy, then, if we worry about keeping score in a malicious way, if we worry about our place in this life, our seat, the honors that come to us, we not only overlook the fact that we've been invited to a banquet, we overlook the great gift of being invited in the first place. We're at the banquet. Does it matter really where we sit if we're invited? If we worry about where we belong, we miss the fact that the banquet of eternity, even the banquet of this life, of all of creation, is an enormous gift. It's good enough in a way just that we're here, regardless of where we're seated. A great little two-line poem I came across a couple years ago that I think sums this up in a way. Of humility. It's from an Arab poet, Hafiz was his name. He lived a number of centuries ago. It's only two lines, nice and short, so I'll tell it to you twice. This is what he says. Even after all this time, the sun never says to the earth, you owe me. Look what happens when a love like that invites the whole sky. Even after all this time, the sun never says to the earth, you owe me. Look what happens when a love like that invites the whole sky.